T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're extremely happy to welcome in Peter King here on 95.7 The Game, our NFL insider on the Dialpad guest line, also brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Peter King with Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Peter, thank you very much for joining us. We obviously start with the trade the Niners made with the Denver Broncos today for Emmanuel Sanders. Do you think they are now a favorite to play in the Super Bowl?
I mean, this trade does not make them a favorite to play in the Super Bowl. It's a good trade for them. Teams are getting freer to make big deals. I spent the weekend with the Rams in Atlanta, and it's clear that the landscape is changing in the NFL right now. And the landscape, which used to be protect your assets at all costs, set a price for whoever you're going to try to sell, and if a team doesn't meet it, then you don't sell them. But times have changed. As Kevin Demoff of the Rams told me over the weekend, the NBA is coming to the NFL. And if you have a Jalen Ramsey who wants out, if you have an Emmanuel Sanders who wants out, and there's no real good reason to keep them, knowing that it's only going to be heartache and or your team is just going to keep losing, why keep them? And I think that's the biggest thing that we're seeing right now. But look, Emmanuel Sanders is an upgrade for them at receiver, but Emmanuel Sanders doesn't catapult them into the Super Bowl favorites role. He's a nice receiver who's whatever he is, 32 years old, and I don't even know what he is. But it's a nice trade. It's a good addition, but it's not revolutionary.
Third and fourth for Emmanuel Sanders, does that sound fair to you?
I mean, it's really heavy, but the world is changing. I mean, Bill Polian, the Hall of Fame GM, told me over the weekend basically that general managers today live in a more transactional society than general managers of previous generations in the NFL, like him. Bill Polian did make some big trades. He traded Marshall Faulk to the Rams, and that was a huge trade. But mostly, general managers in bygone eras were extraordinarily conservative. You know, I've been updating this stat I had in my column on Monday, but just look at what's happened in the last 10 years. In 2009, for the entire calendar year, there were 39 trades involving players in the NFL. 10 years later, as of tonight, with 7 days left in what is sure to be a very active trading season, the 39 in 2009, now it's 58 in 2019. And it's not just schmoes that they're trading either. There's 14 Pro Bowl players who've been traded this year so far. So, the world is changing in the NFL.
Just as a matter of history, who is the general manager who will ultimately get credit for breaking the traditional notions of resistance to trades?
You know, Ray, that's a good question. I would say, look, Bill Belichick has never shied away from trading. He's been a constant. But I would say it would be with the Rams, because I think Les Snead and Kevin Demoff with the Rams have basically said, we have tried it both ways now. We have tried trading for a jillion draft picks. I mean, when they made the Robert Griffin III trade, the trade trading down from the second pick in the draft to give Washington that pick. That trade evolved into tentacles that became eight players that came to the Rams. And now what the Rams have left from that trade is Michael Brockers, who is a good NFL defensive lineman. He's not great. He's not going to the Hall of Fame. And the other seven players they got basically have either disappeared or are totally insignificant. And so the Rams made a couple of those big deals. And I think what the Rams are saying right now, I had a drink with Demoff and Snead in their hotel in Atlanta over the weekend, and they just said, listen, we tried it that way, and we got a lot of picks. It didn't really pan out, and now we're going to do it this way, and we'll see if it works. And so they have basically traded two ones and a four for a player, Jalen Ramsey, who's a very good cornerback. He's only guaranteed to be on their team for the next year and a half. If you ask me my gut feeling, do I think they will keep him for more than a year and a half? Yes. But there's no guarantee, you know, that they're going to do that. So it's a huge, huge risk deal. But look, you see what the 49ers did. They traded basically a 3+, because when you get into they traded a 3 and a 4 and they get the 5 and the receiver back. The 4 and the 5 are likely going to be not probably about 10 picks apart, maybe 12 picks apart. So it's not that big a deal. If you have, let's just say that the 96th or the 109th pick, that's not a big deal. Okay. What is a big deal, obviously, is getting the 3. And so let's just say that 3 is a pretty valuable pick. But I guess I would look, or what they give is a valuable pick. But I guess I would just say this, that I don't mind doing that if they have such a gap on their team. And clearly the Rams need a receiver, just like the Patriots needed a receiver and traded a 2 for Mohamed Sanu. I'd rather have Mohamed Sanu than Emmanuel Sanders, by the way. I'd rather have Mohamed Sanu than A.J. Green, because A.J. Green just gets hurt too much. And by the way, Emmanuel Sanders, and again, do not get me wrong, I like this acquisition. I really do. But he's also missed 8 games the last 2.5 years with injury. So, again, I like the deal. I'm just not convinced it's any Nirvana deal for the 49ers.
Do you expect the bigger name wide receivers on the market? Because you may prefer Sanu, but A.J. Green certainly the bigger name, and Keenan Allen would be the other one I've heard who I would consider in that top-level elite. Do you expect either of them to move at this point?
Well, Keenan Allen is going to be a very, very interesting story, okay? Because I think your point, first of all, the Bengals operate, they're like the closed city of Gorky. And if anybody knows anything about Russian history, they'll know what I'm talking about. They don't care what the rest of the league does. They don't act like the rest of the league does. They do whatever they want to do. And I don't know what they're going to want to do, but my gut feeling is Mike Brown, you know, the 80-something owner of the Bengals, is basically going to say, I want A.J. Green. I do not want to trade A.J. Green. And I would not be surprised if that's how he feels. Now, if you talk about other players on teams that are basically pitfalling right now, I guess I would just say this. So if you look at the Chargers, for instance, okay, the Chargers this weekend have a huge game for them, in my opinion. They're at Chicago. If they lose to go to 2-6, the Chargers season is all but over. And, you know, I don't think anybody out there believes that they're somehow, some way magically, going to go whatever 8-2 down the stretch, or whatever. I don't. I'm making up numbers. You know, so I would not be surprised. Tom Telesco is a pragmatist and the general manager, and if he believes that at 2-6, they would get say a high 2 or a low 1 for Keenan Allen, who I believe is an absolutely extraordinary special talent. I think he's better than AJ Green. I think he's great. Then he's going to have to think about that, in part because I know Tom Telesco. He is a rock-ribbed architecture guy with his team. So I think he would rather keep a great defense intact and trade a great offensive player.
Peter King here on 95.7 The Game. 49ers win a slop fest in D.C. to go to 6-0. They then do the deal for Emmanuel Sanders, and they've got a frisky Carolina team coming to town. What do you think of Kyle Allen and Carolina's chances this week at Levi's Stadium? Are the Niners about to be 7-0 here, Peter? I mean, this is we feel like we're taking peyote in this season.
It's an incredible year, but you know, the Panthers are an interesting team because, you know, one of the things that has been great for the 49ers is that if you want to pass against them, you're not going to have very much hope. And that's what, you know, the teams that they've beaten so far, and again, I'm not saying they have played great quarterbacks, but they have played offenses that wanted to pass the ball. You know, Bruce Arians wanted to pass the ball in week one. Zach Taylor wanted to pass it in week two. The Steelers, not so much. You know, but then you know that the Browns, even though they've got good backs, I mean, Freddie Kitchens wants to throw the ball. Sean McVay, Jared Goff, they want to throw the ball. And so, and you can't count anything about last Sunday. It was, it was like you're playing in the middle of the ocean. It was a ridiculous game. But so I think this game is going to be a little bit different in that if the Niners can stop the run and if they can put a shadow, on Christian McCaffrey, I think it's to their advantage. The big interesting thing in this game, in my opinion, is that, you know, the 49ers are coming off two straight road games, an East Coast trip, and they're playing a team that is coming off a bye, and other than at quarterback, is really quite healthy. So I think this is an interesting test for the 49ers. I think they'll win, but I think that in any game he plays, you know, I think it's possible for Christian McCaffrey to go nuts and to have a 175, 190-yard game.
On the other side of the bay, Oakland got its hat blocked by Aaron Rodgers. And does that tell us more about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, more about Oakland, or more about stuff happens?
Look,
okay, I will.
One of my goats of the week in my column this week, Ray, was Derek Carr. He had a horrible, almost an irresponsible fumble at the 2-yard line, you know, into the end zone, that was huge in this game. And then he from the 15-yard line of the Packers, he threw a bad interception. So those two turnovers, altogether Derek Carr's fault, cost his team 14 points because they both became Packer touchdowns. So you can say, well, I mean, it was still a rout. Well, it was an 18-point game. So if Derek Carr is a little more careful with the ball and all that, you know, all of a sudden we might be looking at this game as a 2-minute warning game. Now, I think that the dangerous thing for the rest of the NFL is that Aaron Rodgers, is starting to make beautiful music with Matt LaFleur. And everyone at the beginning of the season, and I had no strong feeling about it, but I just saw this thing playing out. Aaron Rodgers is the ultimate contrarian. He sees what the...
Have you met Ray Ratto?
No, you're right about that. Sorry. Ray ought to write Rodgers' book, really, because they get along great. But Aaron Rodgers basically heard and felt and saw the entire weight of, you know, the football world and the media world saying, okay, you got Mike McCarthy whacked, and now you've got a piece of molding clay in Matt LaFleur, who's not a strong, you know, altogether strong dictatorial person. So now you can totally control this guy. And so everybody could see the narrative that was playing out. And you know what he did? He said, I'm going to work with this guy. And so far, he has worked with him. He's won some, he's lost some, but he has done what Matt LaFleur has told him to do. And look, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I do know that when you get to be 35 years old and you're staring down the last 4 or 5 years of your career, unless you're Tom Brady, I think you basically say, okay, look, this team hired this coach. This is my coach for at least the next 3 years. So I only maybe have 4 or 5 years left to play the sport of football, and I've only won one Super Bowl, and I am going all in with this guy who people have some doubts about, and that's what I've seen in the first 7 weeks of the season.
Peter, what do you think of John Gruden trading another Reggie McKenzie first-rounder in Gerrion Conley?
I think he got good return for it, but I also think that his defense is a different defense than the one that Conley is going to be playing in Houston, and so I understand why Houston did it. They paid a big price for him, and Houston is denuding itself of draft choices. I'm not sure if they're going to have any draft choices left in a week at the end of the trading deadline, any draft choices in the next 2 years, because, wow, they are totally banking on today. But I would just make this one other point. I think that Mike Mayock and Gruden, but it's mostly Mayock in this case, have done a good job in creating market value for their players. Because I can tell you this, that there was more than one team that wanted Gerrion Conley. And, and more than one team was actively engaged, you know, in the last few days in talking to the Raiders about Gerrion Conley. So you may be looking at this as an Oakland Raiders fan or somebody covering the Raiders and saying, man, I don't want to say good riddance, but I mean, this wasn't a great pick, and they did a good job in getting some value for a guy who is just an average player. And I think they did do a good job in getting value, but there were people outside this organization who recognized that Gerrion Conley was still a player. And as I say, they had more than one team highly interested in Conley.
Cam Newton has been on the rehab trail, allegedly. We heard there was a chance he could play against the Niners. They've announced he will not. I don't know if that means they've chosen Kyle Allen going forward, but if they have, any chance Cam Newton gets traded before the deadline?
Normally I would say no, but I don't know what's going on internally, you know, with the Panthers. I really don't. And what would make this a weird trade, quite honestly, is that you'd be trading for a guy, if you think about it, why would you trade for Cam Newton? You would trade for Cam Newton ostensibly because you were trying to fill a huge hole on your team this year. Okay? And if that be the case, how many teams out there as of next Monday, because there's no way that you're trading for a quarterback this, you know, on Tuesday night, get him in on Thursday morning or late Wednesday, and he's playing Sunday. He's not doing that. And it's hard to imagine, even if you trade for him like next Monday, that he could play you know, in week nine or whatever week it'll be. But anyway, the only reason I'm making that point is that, you know, you have to find someone out there who would want Cam Newton right now, who's got a problem at quarterback and who thinks that Cam Newton right now could come in and be an upgrade on who you have.
Yeah, that's the one. There's one team. There's one team in that category.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, there's the Chicago Bears.
Yep.
And, you know, the Chicago Bears right now, who still fancy themselves a playoff team, I think have a major need for a quarterback. That's how it looks to me anyway. But the other team, you'd say, oh, no way. The other team, I think, is Tennessee.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Tennessee would do that. I'm not saying that Chicago would do it. But first of all, Cam Newton is – you don't even know what he is now because he's coming off shoulder surgery. He's got coming off a foot injury. And he's a different quarterback anyway. You don't really know what he is right now. I sort of doubt he gets moved before next Tuesday.
Talking NFL with Peter King on 95.7 The Game. If every good team owner or president has a list of guys who he wants as his next coach. I mean, Robert Kraft should have that list. If Bill Belichick gets hit by a bus tonight, he's going to need a coach. So every team should have a list of the guy you'd want next. If you could see all of the lists of prospects, Peter, whose name do you think would be higher on most general managers' lists of next head coach they'd be interested in? The ascending Robert Saleh, defensive coordinator of the Niners, or Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley?
Well, first of all, if Bill Belichick gets hit by a bus tomorrow, the coach is going to be Josh McDaniels.
Fair enough.
The Patriots have basically already, I don't want to say committed to him, but all but committed to him. Now, that isn't to say that Josh McDaniels couldn't go somewhere this offseason. He might. If there's a place with a quarterback he likes, I wouldn't be shocked if he moved. But let's get to your question. There is always in the NFL a love affair with the offensive guru. And I think right now, as I look at this, and you look at the fact that there's a good chance, I don't know if you'd say a very good chance, there's a good chance that a transfer quarterback into Oklahoma will, for the third straight year, win the Heisman Trophy this year. It's one of the really interesting slash, I don't say I'd call it amazing, but weirdly coincidental, but telling stories in football right now, that Lincoln Riley with Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and Jalen Hurts are in essence, you know, he's created this sort of farm system where he can invent a quarterback in his system in one off season. And that's what he's done. But I do also want to say this. I've got a little bit of knowledge about this situation, and I do not believe that Lincoln Riley will go into the NFL after this season. I don't know it for sure, but I have heard from people who've gone into Oklahoma this year that one day he'd like to coach in the NFL. He'd really like to stay at Oklahoma for a while. He's having too good a time. He loves his job. Now, what happens if Jerry Jones calls him up and says, we'll give you $10 million a year to come coach the Cowboys? I can't tell you what he'd say. I don't know. But you ask about Robert Saleh, and there's not a single assistant coach this year who has done more for his cause to be a head coach in 2020 or beyond than Robert Saleh. And so I think he's going to be a head coach at one point in the future. I think it depends on what team owners this year want, who they have on their team. Do you have a young quarterback who isn't getting the job done? Now, if Robert Saleh can say, I'm bringing Joe Miracle quarterback coach with me, then all of a sudden he's in the mix there. But I think most owners would say, if I have an underachieving quarterback and I want the fix, I want an offensive mind. So in your question, maybe then they go absolutely all out to try to get Lincoln Riley.
Toward that question, today's owners have a lot more to do with coaches getting hired than ever before. Do most owners have a sort of a value-neutral bias toward offensive coaches anyway? Would Robert Saleh have to oversell to sell the same way that the hypothetical Lincoln Riley would?
Well, Ray, I think if you look at the teams that are going to have openings, I think that's where you have to start. Where does he really have a chance? Okay, or where might people be interested in him this year? Okay, now, every year there's always a stunning coaching change. Every year. But as I look at the league right now, okay, I don't see a gigantic year for coaches. I think Jacksonville, there's a good chance that Jacksonville makes a change. Even though Oakland and the Chargers and Denver are all underachievers, I think they're all going to keep their coaches this year. Obviously, there's an opening in Washington. There might be an opening with the Giants. So we've gotten to four now. I don't think there's going to be an opening in the NFC North. And there's going to be an opening in Atlanta. All right. But beyond that, I definitely don't think there's going to be an opening unless Pete Carroll decides he wants to retire in the West. So there's not going to be a huge number of openings. In my opinion, Arthur Blank is going to look at the landscape and he's going to say, I want the smartest offensive mind that I can find. If that's Lincoln Riley, if that's Josh McDaniels, fine. But I'm paying Julio Jones and Matt Ryan $50 million a year, and my offense blows. And, I'm going to do everything I can to fix it. So I doubt he's been with a defensive guy. It hasn't worked. The Giants, I can't tell you. They really might be interested. They usually are a team that hires the best candidate. So they might be interested. And Washington, I think they're going to want to hire a quarterback guru. So, and again, that's a long way of answering your question. But I think it has to be an owner who does it the Bill Parcells way. Bill Parcells, last year, I remember talking to him when all these teams had openings and they're talking about hiring the Matt LaFleurs and the guys who've never been in charge of any team and not been head coaches at any level, because he believes that, to be a head coach means that, not all that much of it is how you design the offense. It's everything else. It's all the other crap that you have to do and the leadership that you provide. So again, I don't mean to be down on his candidacy. It's just that I don't think it's any lock he's getting a job this year.
Peter, you're the man. Thank you so much. Always appreciate your time.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Talk to you next week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.